minutes. We'll start over again. And all right, so we'll take up today. I was looking over, actually a friend brought to my attention, you know, Maimonides wrote a number of things. One of them was a commentary on the Mishnah. So on Talmud Sanhedrin, the 10th chapter, it starts off talking about how people have a portion of the world to come. And he goes later on in his commentary on the Mishnah, he talks about the 13 fundamentals, of course. And before that, he talks about how he says people who are even, you know, Torah followers, how they have these erroneous opinions about what reward is in general. So, you know, the question is reward, you know, afterlife. What is the concept? And that also will have a big, it plays a major role, a primary role, in terms of what our life should be focused on here. Because that's a response. So we started off with a question. So what would we say our objective is here on Earth? Simple question.
Wouldn't it be to increase our learning and knowledge and grow our character or develop our character?
Okay. Increase our knowledge, develop our character, agreed. Are we doing that for is that a means? Is it an ends? Is there a certain command that we could fit this into? If we had to define, let's say, the most perfected human being, I mean, this is all just, you know, talking loosely.
Well, it seems like it's not a means, because if it were the means, then there would have to be some end, other than that, if I loosely describe it as perfection of the soul. But it seems like that's kind of the ultimate good that we can have. I mean, it's knowledge of Hashem. And I guess I can't see that there's anything beyond that. Kind of like the learning is its own reward.
Okay, what do you mean by that? The learning is its own reward.
Well, if we step back and look at this life, say, okay, well, what's the best thing you can have here? I mean, you've either got a bunch of physical things, you know, you get a nice meal, you can go walk through the park, all kinds of physical enjoyments. But all those ultimately are temporal, and, you know, they tend to fade away.
Right.
Or there's the world of the intellect and the world of learning about ideas, which have no physicality and no temporary life to them. I mean, they go on. As we discussed, I think in the past, law of gravity, you know, continues to exist, but it's abstract. And that the real joy for man and the real ultimate place where he's fulfilling his purpose is to be involved in that world of learning. And that is the greatest enjoyment that he can have.
Right.
Look around at all the possible enjoyments of man. Being involved in that world is the greatest enjoyment.
Yeah, Maimonides actually says in this commentary, he says, you know, any type of enjoyment, whether it's, you know, food or any of the drives, sexual drive, appetitive drive, he says, you see that people will opt to not do that if it gives them a bad name. Like, a person doesn't want to be known as a glutton or as like a playboy. He'd rather be known as, you know, having a more important reputation. And he says, you see that type of thing, reputation, that's something which is completely in a person's mind. And that's something which he enjoys more I mean, his sense of how people perceive him, or if a, I'm trying to think of another example. That was the example he gave, that a person doesn't want to have that view, and that doesn't even have any type of a sensual satisfaction, yet he enjoys it more. He will forego any type of physical pleasure in order to attain something even greater in his mind. So he wanted to show from that that, you see, people do value the enjoyments of the mind. And that's like just a very, you know, crude type of example, but it shows the point, how a person can opt for the abstract more than the physical. And he also talks about a king in contrast to his days as being a child playing with a ball. He says the king doesn't even remember the enjoyment that he had playing with a ball. He's a different level altogether. There he was using that example to show how the same way the enjoyments of the spirit, the spiritual enjoyments, are in, when we're in that state after death, so, you know, like the angels he refers, so then we won't have any recollection of the physical enjoyments. It's just too supreme. He says the angels too have no perception of that because they are not physical, they're intelligences, and they're completely involved in a non-temporal enjoyment, like you put it. But these are things that do not end. And he quoted the rabbis as saying, you know, what are the righteous doing in the next world? They're sitting with their crowns on their head and enjoying the splendor of God's presence. So he meant to say the crowns on the heads means they're involved in the intellectual apprehension, in the greater knowledge that far surpassed any knowledge they have here. There was a lot he discussed, but you're right that the real enjoyment the person can have here is not something which is temporary or something that he gets tired from, or he's only a certain amount of energy he can put into a certain enjoyment. So knowledge is not like that, and it satisfies the person in a higher realm because it's satisfying him in his higher aspect, not in the lower feature, not in the body, but in what he realizes is important, what is truth. And it gives such an enjoyment. It's like I think another example, I don't know if he mentioned it, but I was discussing it with Howie. So we talked about how a person could be like in front of a big audience and delivering a great speech, and how that moment, like, nothing matched that. He never thought that at that moment when he was delivering a speech, the applause, and how he was reaching people with ideas, and even just the applause itself, no stake, no sexual activity ever would match up to that. He would admit that, first of all, because it's temporary, but he recognizes what the difference is in terms of the levels of importance. So that itself adds to the value that a person has when he's involved in the intellectual pursuits. He just recognizes being, this is important, this is real. We had gone to a funeral together a couple of months back, and we were looking at one of the passages there. It says when what you say when you're admitting of God's righteousness, because of the one concept in saying the Kaddish, the mourner's prayer, is that it's to counter the aggressiveness a person might have when he loses a loved one. So by saying that God is righteous and that you're praising God, you recognize that this death is something which is part of a design, and it's a good. Like they say that in the current day, we say, blessed is a true judge when we hear somebody died. But in the future, we're going to say the one who's good and does good. Because in the future, when God reveals the Messiah and the knowledge of God is going to fill the earth, so then we will not have a corrupt view of death. We're going to look at it as being as good as anything. Just like you buy a home, you say the prayer, the one who's good and does good. I mean, it's a joyous thing. So in the future, a person passes away, a person again will say, Hatov Hamaitav, he is good and he does good. We won't have the selfish view of losing somebody, we'll have the more objective view. So the concept now of reward and is going to be, you know, completely proportionate to our view, our accuracy of the view of what the best thing is here. And Maimonides goes through it. He talks about certain people think, you know, the certain physical pleasures, or like in Garden of Eden, or rejoining with your loved ones. He has all these different views. He shows that these are the people that even follow the Torah, but they have false views in terms of what they feel the reward is. His main point is that reward is not something which is extraneous to the perfect life here. That's his critique. But people have a view that there's something else. I live a life of Torah, I live a life of following God, but I'm going to get X as a result. So what's the flaw in that thing, in that assumption?
It seems like it would assume if I do X in order to get Y, that the reason that I'm doing it is not because of it itself, but it's the Y I'm after. It's the reward.
Right, some imagined thing which is also, they assume it's greater, right?
Right, and so I'm really only doing the thing, the X thing, in order to get the Y thing. And if you didn't have the Y reward, I wouldn't do the X thing.
And in fact, when the person is doing it that way, when a person is living for X in order to get Y, is he really going after X? Meaning when the person is living the Torah lifestyle in order to get an imagined good, meaning the false view. But when he is doing that, is he really living the Torah lifestyle?
No, not because they see the inherent good in it, but only because it's a means to the cookies.
Exactly. See, even when they're doing it that way, they're not even following it the right way. So the actual life itself is not for the, you don't want the X, it's a pain. Now, if you're going after it in that state of mind, you're really not getting X. And if the next world is merely a continuation, and that's what the rabbis looked forward to, you know, Maimonides talks about it, why did the righteous look forward to the next world? Because it wasn't because of any type of, the days of Messiah, excuse me. It wasn't because of any type of ruling over the other nations or wealth or popularity. It was because of having unencumbered pursuit of wisdom. So they did not look for something outside of what they had already. It was just a greater state, which is what Rabbi Chassid wants, that the learning of Torah in the next world, that's where you learn most of your Torah. Because that's really where the senses are not limiting your intake of knowledge. So you're not limited by sensual apprehension. And you're in a state where is a higher level of existence. But the person is not going to be able to enjoy the next world if he was just painting himself here with some imagination about what the next world is. Really, the only person that's going to really enjoy the next world is going to be someone who really partook to some degree. And that's what Maimonides says. He says that when a person, he's commenting on the last, there was a comment he made on the last Mishnah in Makos. And he says over there that God gave many commands in order to increase the reward. So there's different views as to what that means. Maimonides says that the increase of the commands is in order that it's impossible that with so many commands that a person wouldn't do at least one of them the right way. And doing it the right way, he acquires his next world. So now he's giving you an insight. How do you acquire the next world? You're acquiring it because you are, with so many opportunities for the commands, there must have been one that you did well. And when you did it right, you did it for the thing itself. You performed it because you saw that this is a real value. So when you saw that as being a truth, and you now, what happens is that the soul is now partaking and agreeing with the truth that it sees in this command. Let's say charity. That's the example that Maimonides gives over there. So the person, by doing that, by fulfilling that command, because he just sees clearly this is a truth, it's important to help out somebody. So I want to do this for that reason. So now he is partaking of a truth. Now, a truth is an eternal thing. And so somehow, as the soul is convinced of something which is eternal, it now partakes of the eternal. And that's how the soul acquires its eternal life. But it's, you see, it's through the attachment, the conviction of an idea as being true. And of course, a real conviction has to follow through with action. A person doesn't act on a conviction, he's really not 100% convinced. So that's the concept of a command, is to have an expression, because that's the way we are wired as a human being, that true conviction now is expressed in action. And it's a real blessing, because when we don't see ourselves acting on something, now that's God's gift to us to show us, look, you're not acting. It's a display of your lack of conviction. Now reflect on why you're not acting, and see that you're not acting, and now you will know that you're really not 100% convinced, because if you were 100% convinced about a certain truth, you would act. So, the same thing over here, that if a person is living the right life, that means he enjoys knowledge for the thing itself. He's not looking for something else. Because he is looking for something else, and he's not really enjoying the knowledge. And if he's not enjoying the knowledge, so what type of... If he never really valued knowledge as an enjoyment, so how is he going to enjoy it in the next world? He didn't do it here. He didn't train himself. He didn't immerse himself and spend the time necessary to arrive at a removal of the instinctual portion of life where you're attached to the emotions more, and then removing yourself and just letting the emotions remove their latch on you from training, and then you finally can get a taste of wisdom, and then the person will naturally want it more. But that person never got to that point. If he's just looking for something else, he's got an imagination about some great thing he's going to receive. But if he does the right actions, and he abandons looking for something else, which my mind says is very difficult, very few people do it. I mean, he's very honest. But that is something which will give him the greatest life here. And it actually gives him his life in the next world, because now he's attached to wisdom just because he enjoys it. I mean, a person, I think also, honestly, that should alert a person. Like, why should I want to put my energies into something which is going to end in 80, 90 years? If I have the option to have an eternal life, and I understand what that is, so that's something which a person should jump at. So he talks about also about different views of people when they how they view the rabbis. There were three groups. Two were wrong, and the last one was the right approach. First one, he says, is where people take everything literal, and they say that's all there is to it, and whatever the rabbis wrote, it's a literal thing, there's nothing underlying it. So said these people are, the foolish people, and they're missing it. They're missing the mark, and they even things that a typical person would find something just incomprehensible to tell them over, that this giant lifted up a mountain and held it over the Jews. Like, if you take anyone in the Godic or the allegories of the rabbis, but these people, this first group, takes them literally, and they come away with nonsensical opinions. Even a typical person who's not acquainted with the stories would hear this and say, this is odd, this doesn't make sense. The second group, which says they do that, they again take everything literal, and they also say that they have more knowledge than the rabbis, and they put down the rabbis. So they deride the rabbis. I myself saw this once. And it's just amazing. It was from a learned person. He was putting down, saying he was greater than Rashi. Where was this person's writings? Rashi wrote volumes on the Torah and the Talmud, and here this person is coming along in a public lecture, and he's saying that he's greater. So you see, the ego really sometimes could really get a hold of a person, and if he heard what he was saying, it was just appalling. But the last group he talks about are the people that understand that there's something behind the words of the rabbis, that they wrote in riddles. And he quotes the beginning of Proverbs, where King Solomon says this openly, that the words of the rabbis and the riddles, or the moot sayings. So, that group, he says, are very small, very, very few people in that group. Even in his time, Maimonides saw this. But nonetheless, you know, we never say that numbers proves anything. So, you know, this tremendous amount to be seen. But he does you know, really stress that point, that to have the right knowledge of what the concept is in reward. I mean, that's such a primary principle, so that we really have to know and, you know, to teach others. And without it, so then we completely forego the one opportunity of really learning for the sake of the thing itself. Because he also addresses in there how if you tell a person that to do something for the thing itself, it's very hard for them to do, because most of the actions that these people do, if not all the actions, are either to get some good or to avoid some bad, avoid some injury. Because this is how people are conditioned in their thinking. And to present them with a concept that learning is really not for anything else. It's a difficult thing unless a person has good teachers and they could open their mind and to have that opportunity. So it's and again, this is commentary on the Mishnah on the 10th chapter in the Talmud Sanhedrin. All right, let me stop here and see if they have questions or comments.
Rabbi, the commentary on the Mishnah, that's different than the Mishnah Torah, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
In Hebrew, it's called the Perish HaMishnayos. It's usually found, I'm not sure if it's in English. If any of them were, I would say this one would be, because it's such a fundamental. And it's right before he goes in to his 13 principles.
Okay.
And it starts at the very beginning of chapter 10 in his commentary. Yeah, he says, like you said, I mean, the reward is not something which is it's not something which is physical, because anything physical is limited. That enjoyment of the next world is something which has no end. There's no weariness, there's no eating and drinking, there's no standing, there's no sitting. It's not a physical existence, the next world. But in all honesty, Nachmanides' view of the next world, he says it's on earth. It's one of the largest arguments you'll find, is that Maimonides says the afterlife is a metaphysical state, and Nachmanides says it's on earth.
So Nachmanides is holding that we would actually come back, a person who makes it into the world to come would actually come back physically and be on the planet.
That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Does he hold that, like when the resurrection was happened, does Nachmanides say that the people would not die then from that point?
Good question. I don't know.
Maimonides says, you know, the people in the resurrection, they end up, you know, they live and die.
Yeah, he says the only difference, Maimonides quotes the rabbis that say that the only difference between now and the days of the Messiah are the subservience to alien kingdoms.
Yeah.
And the end is, and it says alone. I mean, that is the only difference. There'll be people that'll be sinners and righteous. There'll be sickness. There'll be so on. But the knowledge of God will be apparent. Making a living will be easier. And but that's the one thing that he says the only real difference. But evidently, yeah, people will. The resurrection, he says, is for the righteous. And it would appear that they would live, but he says even the Messiah will die, and then the son will take over in his state. Yeah, but that's the days of the Messiah, which is different than the afterlife, according to Maimonides. It seems to be, according to Nachmanides, the Messiah, the days of the Messiah and the afterlife are one, on earth.
So would according to the Nachmanides, then, is the reward still, basically, like, learning and knowledge? He's not saying that the reward would be physical pleasure, then, necessarily.
No, no. The high level is still going to be, the ultimate state is still going to be knowledge of Hashem. Knowledge
right.
of God will still
just
be
the people with
it would just be attained here physically.
Yeah,
we'd be able to attain it physically.
Yeah,
there wouldn't be an impediment. I think if I'm not mistaken, he says that you see that shouldn't be a difficulty because you see that people still live a very long time. They used to live to a year or to 1,000 years old. And Maimonides even says here that even though the ultimate state is when a person is dead. But in the times of the Messiah, since anguish and a lot of stresses will be gone, people will naturally live longer. Even though people will ultimately die too, according to Maimonides, but they will have longer lifespans because of the all the stresses have been lifted.
Rabbi, is Nachmanides then suggesting that the time of the Messiah and the world to come would be very similar to what we understand life was like when King Solomon reigned?
Yeah, it could be.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be a good model. But it does say, Maimonides says here that the Messiah will be greater than King Solomon.
Well.
He says it in another place too. And he's greater than Maimonides, greater than King Solomon and close to Moses. Not quite Moses, though. So it'll be an amazing time to live to hear the great wisdom. And this could happen. We're supposed to anticipate this all the time. This is one of the things that we should be looking forward to. Because this is the ultimate state for man. Rabbi Mann once asked the question, why in the 13 principles that all seem to be dealing with perfections of God or the right ideas of God, is one of them the concept of the Messiah? What does that have to do with God? We understand that God knows everything, that God is the first, and that he's the first cause. These are all fundamentals about God. So what is the concept of the Messiah doing there, in that list?
That is a very good question.
Yeah. But he gave a very good answer. And he said that this now is shows the perfection in man, that, and it's a reflection on God, that the one creature that was imperfect now became and reached its perfection. So that reflects back on God that he created everything perfect. But you don't have that until the Messiah. So now it's important that this is part of the fundamentals, because this now reflects on our view of a perfect creator, that the last thing which is imperfect, I mean, everything else functions as it should. Man is the only thing that has not reached that level until the days of the Messiah. So God ensures us this will happen, and that now reflects on his being a perfect creator. Because nothing is imperfect anymore at that time. But it is a difficult thing to straddle. I mean, I see myself that on the one hand, you're living and there's a certain duration to our lives, and we are concerned about what happens next, and that's a curiosity. On the other hand, we know that everything God does is good. David said this openly in Psalms, and we just see it ourselves from all the acts that he's done throughout time. So we have to have the conviction that what he has in store for us after this life is good. And the constant detachment from the physical lusts and the lures, it has to be addressed, because the emotions are with us until the day we die. But the more we are focusing in on looking for just a truth and just abandoning all else while we're in those moments during the day, and hopefully we can grow those moments into to hours and longer, you know, durations. But doing that, we then activate our souls that we really are functioning exactly as he wanted, and we're perceiving the truth, so we're enjoying it, and we're really seeing what our whole existence is all about, and we're living just in that one moment, which really must be the right state of mind, where there is no ulterior motive, where there is nothing else that's on our minds, but we can really disengage from other interests and put our energies into to seeing the idea and enjoying it. I mean, like sometimes at the end of a class or every treatment give, he would you know, the guys are would want to move on, and he would say, David, let's just enjoy this idea. Like after we toil for like an hour or two, and he finally formulates the idea that we were learning, so he would say, let's just enjoy the idea, meaning that has to be something which captivates us. If it doesn't, we're doing something wrong. That should really be the most captivating existence in our lives. When we see something new, hey, that, you know, it's like, you know, like a bright light just caught our vision, and we can't see anything else. Like, you know, get deer in the headlights. So that's a good barometer in terms of have we really, you know, reached that. He would also say also that Rav Chaya would say to, you know, learn what you enjoy. And also go after the, like, for example, when you are learning and you have a couple of questions, so go after the most compelling question. Meaning, he's saying all these things is that, you know, go where the attraction of your mind is. Because that will give you the attraction of the mind is because there's a lot of energy going into that specific point or that question. So that's where you're going to find the most success in your learning. So pick something that you enjoy, pick an area that you enjoy, go after the questions when you're in that area that compel you more. You know, and then just keep cultivating that. And yes, the afterlife is for everybody. Everybody who, if somebody's asking online, JHS is asking online, is the afterlife for everybody? Yes. Again, there's only one design to a human being, so we all have that potential. And of course, you know, the greater involvement, the greater the afterlife. And the more a person sees here, that we discussed something last week, that a person should, like the rabbis say in Ethics of the Fathers, they say this world is an entry hall to the main banquet hall. Prepare yourself in the entry hall so you can come in and enjoy the banquet. So it's the person who does prepare here and spends the time, and of course it's going to be proportionate. The afterlife, the enjoyment, is going to be proportionate. Chase said once also that I think there was one person who, at his last moment of his life, he repented, he did something good, and he, through that act, he obtained the afterlife. But Rabbi Chaya commented, but what type of afterlife was that compared to somebody like Rav Moshe Feinstein? A person who learned his whole life, 17 hours a day, compared to somebody who at the end of his life, when he was 85, repented and did one thing, and he got an afterlife for himself, but I mean, it's a far cry from what somebody who spent their entire life engaged in. So it is available for everybody, but of course it's going to be in different measures.
I mean, not everyone will attain the afterlife, though, right?
If they don't live properly, no. Going to Maimonides, the person who doesn't, and he's just completely, he says also a very important thing, I'm glad you raised the question, he says, inasmuch as a person, let me see if I have the page right here. Let's Yeah, here it is. He says, behold, in all that which we choose and accustom ourselves and regulate ourselves in the physical enjoyments of the body, and we also despise the truth and we love lies, so we are cut off from that great elevated state, and we remain as mortar, as dust, as physicality, and we are cut off from the next world. And conversely, also is the true, that the more we're involved in the ideas, the more we attain. So he says that the person who's giving in to the physical and he keeps on anchoring himself in a physical orientation, he's crippling his soul from excelling and rising to a higher state. So it's something which a person has to have a balance. He has to, I mean, the Talmud says that the person who passes up even one enjoyment in this life, he's judged for it. I mean, if there's a delicious fruit, then you become like an ascetic, and you say, no, I'm going to deny myself. See, that's a denial of truth. God made us with taste buds. He made us that we should have enjoyments. It's a necessary thing, so there has to be a balance in terms of not overindulging. I mean, we just read last week in the Torah, in Parshas Re'eh, that it says that you should only eat meat when you have the desire. So when you do have the desire, so do it. But it should be something where you're regulating your intake, your involvement with what's necessary. It talks about also what's the right amount of sexual intercourse. I think it refers to a person who's a real wise individual, the Talmud Chacham, a wise individual. So then, once a week, it says. And again, a person has to know himself too. I mean, it's telling you that it shouldn't be a constant type of a thing, because then if you regulate yourself with this type of, you know, constant involvement, I mean, there's no prohibition, but that's something which it removes the person from being involved in the pursuits. You know, again, a younger person has to be different than an older person. I mean, a person has to use his sensibility. He has to use his understanding of what his needs are. You have different people with different temperaments. If a person, let's say, recently gave up smoking, which is a good thing, and he finds himself eating a little bit more, so maybe that's okay, because as long as he's eating healthily, but the oral fixation to the cigarette now looks for something else as a replacement, so maybe he can't go cold turkey, so he goes slowly. So again, it's part of a person has to know themselves. You can't put yourself in a state, you know, of course, unless something's prohibited, but to put yourself in a state where it's your mind is completely crippled because you're too much of a vice on a certain thing. So you can't, like, change yourself overnight. If a person's, you know, a certain type of a temperament and he's too extreme in terms of, let's say, he's too loose with his money, so not to spend anything at all is what Maimonides says is to do, and then you balance out in the middle. So he does say that, you know, in terms of these, you know, most of the temperaments, most of the personality traits, if you're at one extreme, you should go to the other extreme, and then you'll naturally balance out in the middle. And as Rabbi Shet explained, the reason why you want to balance out in the middle is that you're equidistant from both poles of that character trait. Now, that's when you have the weakest amount of pull is being put on you by the emotions, in order that you can be involved in wisdom. So balancing out in the middle is really a means. It's not a goal in and of itself. It's an order to keep yourself equidistant from the two poles, because when you're too close to one of the two extremes on a certain spectrum of an emotion, so then that emotion is going to big pull on you, and it's tapping your energies from wisdom. And JHS is asking if the Torah is the only way to the afterlife. No, but like Rabbi Chait said, it's very few could be like an Abraham, who without a Torah was able to arrive at the perfected state for man. So the Torah is a great gift, and that really should be our tool to follow the path that God mapped out. Because then all the main points cause us to be, focus us, meaning the way the Torah is designed is that the person can't miss the main points. so much of the Torah is addressing idolatry, because the main point is to recognize the Creator. And then the way the Torah presents itself, the areas that are of less, you know, that are less fundamental, are not going to have the same focus for us. So God will make sure that as we read the Torah, that what is of primary importance is of primary focus. So the design of it is a great thing, not just in terms of the elements that are included, but in the presentation. All right, any questions? Any comments?
Makes sense.
You know, I'll try to see if I can get a hold of this in English for you, because this is such an important area that he goes through. There's so many points.
Yeah, you're thinking it's not published in English?
It may be. I never saw it myself, but it doesn't mean anything, because, you know.
It seems like maybe I've seen it somewhere. I know I have the introduction to the commentary on the mission in English. Hmm. Now that's been translated, but I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Like I've seen somewhere.
I'm taking a look online right now. But the computer's right here. Let me see. If.
Here it is.
Yeah, you found it?
Well, yes, I just caught it on a site called PriceGrabber.com, but it says Maimonides' commentary on the Mishnah Tractate Sanhedrin, paren English.
Oh, look at this.
Publisher Sefer Hermon.
Yeah, here's one that my friend's father translated. He's a very good translator. Yeah, they got it. Maimonides' commentary on the Mishnah Tractate Sanhedrin by Fred Rosner.
Oh, yeah, I've got some other stuff of Fred Rosner's.
Right. Okay, so there is one. Very good.
Where are you? What site are you looking on?
I'm going to send you and send you both the link now. I'll put it online too in a second for JHS. Thinking Die. And Josh, you're his PLANK.
My email?
Yeah.
jo@fastmail.fm.
Fastmail dot F like Frank, M like Mary?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the link. Okay, I just sent it to both of you. Let me just put it online too. And it's a JHS. You got that there. Yeah, it's on Amazon. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Yeah, that's a real must read.
That's where you have the 13 principles too, right?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, I think I already have this volume. I just looking at the picture on the website. I'll have to go over my my bookshelf upstairs and see, but I think I already have it.
Oh, good.
No. If not, I'll have to get one.
Amazon does have fast shipping.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, email comes, it's in the bookshelf.
That's funny. All right, very good. Here, look it over.
Oh, what's that?
Yeah, I think there's a bookstore over here. I'm going to see if they got it also. Sometimes I buy a bunch of these copies and give them out. I have a few copies of the Guide for Perplexed. So I think I must have bought a couple of dozen of those so far.
You work off of the Dover Publications red paperback?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that actually I found online, and I also put it on the Misora site, so we could search through it, you know, by keyword. Sometimes it's easier for me to find something that way.
Oh yeah, that's really handy.
Yeah.
Please note that your conference will expire in 10 minutes.
Is that the one that's translated by what, Friedlander?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I got like the old hardback of that.
Yeah, that's one good. That one's good. It has a lot of footnotes. I used to have that.
Yeah.
I used to have that copy. I don't know what happened. All right. So we'll if you want to look through it, see if there's any points you want to take up on this. You think you can get a hold of a copy in the next couple of days, there, Josh?
The next couple of days.
Maybe I'm wondering if there's an English translation online. Because then we could, you know, go through it together and go to the more fine points next week.
Yeah, okay.
So see if you get a hold of it.
Yeah.
I'll see if we can get this. See if we can get the same issue too, because this way we could all refer to the same page if we're going through it. I'll try and get the same one you have, Doug.
Okay.
All right, good. So next week is good. We're on.
Next week is good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. So I'm just following up on the email. I'll see more. I'll do more searches on what, you know, Jewish organizations are located out there, and have a helping hand that they can lend. Then I'll, you know, CC you everybody on that as we build up some sort of a you know, contact list.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, good to speak to everybody again. Been too long. Cal, have a good week. Josh. Have a good week.
Cal had to step out, but she would send greetings and thank you.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you, Rabbi. We really appreciate it.
Okay, my pleasure. Please.
Have a great week.
You too. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so we'll wrap it up for today. We'll continue next week on the same theme. Good week. Good week to everybody.